This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, so we're back and ready to charge ahead. Sherry, do you know what our next item
is? I do. It is using the direct benefit, courts receiving direct benefit document. It is the 2015 Language Needs Study, which is line 12. But I don't see an amount there, yeah.
I mean, I know that there's one in particular that's a large amount that we could.
We already did that. Well, you were gone. The workers' comp?
Good.
Yeah. You step out, I take care of business, Luca. Okay. So language needs is item 12. Clarification, Stephen, though, and Colin, is there a cost this year?
No.
Okay. So moving along. Audit contract is line
25.
Okay, so line 39, and what's the other line?
Well, line 25 and 26 on the summary, chapter 4A. And the summary of the code
is
pages
39
and
40.
Okay,
25
and 26. Number 39. Yeah. Audit services, that is interesting. That is fifth as being the most beneficial, whereas audit contract 39 is 39th of 49 as not being helpful, directly benefiting the trial courts.
I think, Sherry, that was one I was referring to. A lot of people didn't understand.
Could you explain it?
John probably can.
Oh, okay. Maybe John could explain it.
Yeah, I'm on the line. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, John.
The audit contract used to be with Schober-Geverschenk a while ago. The last audit we did using that in the 150 as part of the audit contract was Los Angeles, as a matter of fact. In the last 2 years, we've basically used those funds, or not used those funds, to contract out to save money. So, in essence, we haven't used the 150 in the last 2 years to do roughly two audits a year.
So, should it be eliminated?
Well, we get it every year, so we eliminate it every year as savings.
Okay, so let's. So then what we're really talking about then is audit services.
Yes. And that 150 represents roughly two audits a year.
The contract.
Yeah, so what we would have to do is contract out, do an RFP, contract out to do two audits, and we haven't done that for the last 2 years to save funds.
So we should not. John, the question is now about the audit services, not the 150 any longer, right?
Oh, okay. The audit services money is for four staff positions, which is, you know, four out of my complement of, 14 total people within audit services. And those auditors do audits during the course of the year for the Superior Courts. And that's part
and
of our.
How is that different than the contract? So you use a contract because it's cheaper than hiring additional staff?
No, it's historically been supplemental to audit services, so it provides additional contract externally to supplement audits. So instead of hiring internal staff, we've used the audit contract.
So if the contract continued to be eliminated, the 150, you would just use the four staff and audit services to do the auditing of the Superior Courts, even though it wouldn't be maybe as often as you'd like without the contract. That's what you would do?
Yes. I have both IMF-funded staff four, and I have general fund staff. So I would just continue to use the internal staff I have to do whatever I can on an annual basis.
So, can I ask a question?
Yes.
So, John, this is Stephen, and I'm a big believer in our audit program, and I'm excited that you guys are going to be auditing us. No, I'm just kidding. In a couple of weeks. having said that, the thing I don't quite understand is still, so under the statute, and I'm also looking at Blacko, the state is supposed to pick up responsibility for the audits. Is that correct?
No.
The Bureau of State Audits. The
contract.
No. Yeah, we're
the
talking
California,
about.
The California State Auditor does contracts and procurement audits of five judicial branch entities on an every other year basis. And so they would do five, maybe four courts and one appellate every other year. And so that's roughly a, what, 25-year cycle on contracts and procurement. And then there's also the financial side, which is also covered under the same statute. But that's financial versus operational versus contracts and procurement. Three different animals.
But the financial is directed at who? The court.
It's both. It's every other year AOC, which is what can be done, and then courts are every other year, similar to the state auditor. So you've got different auditors in or waiting to do their audits, but it doesn't cover, as an example, Stephen, it doesn't cover cash audits, you know, cash control. It doesn't cover many of the other areas which we cover, and it's really more supplemental and at a higher level than what we audit.
Yeah, you're saying it's supplemental, John, but they were taking over the responsibility because I remember you and I both were there as all those discussions and debates, and the state was picking up responsibility for doing the really taking the primary role in the financial audit. Your position always would that almost put you out of business, and that's why here we are a couple years later, and we're still talking about a substantial piece of the budget in a time when we're cutting all this critical stuff. And I am saying this, again, seriously, not as a critic. I have the world of respect for our audit program, very, very thorough. But we're cutting critical stuff everywhere, and I just don't know how it is that we're funding something that the state has said we're doing it at the state level.
Well, but it's different, Stephen. A financial audit, a financial statement audit, is very much different than an internal audit. A financial audit, when you give the opinion, you give an opinion on fairness, that's what they're doing. And so it's really not putting anybody out of business. It's looking at the financials, kind of doing a desktop review. Very much different in terms of its nature versus, you know, like the contract and procurement. The five court audits that they just did this last year was at a very high level where they looked at aspects of contracts and aspects of procurement, but didn't do accounts payable, didn't do travel claims, didn't do cash control. So there's a lot of confusion as to exactly who's doing what and when they're doing it, and it's not on a regular cycle. So that's back to the distinction that we have talked about previously about auditors and internal auditors. Those are two different processes, and they cover different things.
Sean?
John, this is Sean Landry, and I say this, we're in the middle of an audit, so I say this carefully. But the audit services, the $660,000 that comes out of IMF, do you know, I guess my question is, why is that out of IMF, and why isn't that a core function of the judicial branch and funded?
Well, Sean, it was originally general fund monies as kind of with the AOC or Judicial Council, but then the funding was changed around where they swapped out half of the funding and gave me improvement fund money.
So you had mentioned, you started the conversation, John, this is Sherry, by saying that you have some general fund staff and then this IMF kind of picks up the other piece. Does that mean that you have about $1.2 million in total staffing costs and half is IMF and half is general fund?
Approximately, yes.
Judge Smith?
Yeah, I guess I'm confused because part of our conversation is what should be in the IMF fund and what should not. And I think this is the perfect example mm-hmm. of a core function of the court that's in the IMF fund, which doesn't belong there. Now, whether it should be funded is another issue, and we've sort of had that conversation along with what to do with these various line items. But I think that if this is one of those things that we should maybe come a creative alternative, and I don't know what it is because I don't know enough about where to suggest it go, because I'm not suggesting we just say cut it and then forget about it, but I'm going to suggest that we cut it, but come up with an alternative way of fully funding, or at least funding to the extent it's necessary, the audit functions.
Does anybody know the history behind why it went from a full general fund funding to a partial IMF funding?
Maybe John does. Do you know when that happened, John?
That happened under Tina Hansen when TCAS was formed.
So what year was that? I don't even know what TCAS is.
The Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah, that's
Phoenix.
Back in 2006 or 2007?
2002,
okay.
So would a thought be to, you know, recognizing that we can't make something general fund, but would a thought be that we put an asterisk by this, that
mm-hmm.
we believe that the best place for this is back with funded through the general fund money?
It is. It seems to me to be a central office function and not an IMF.
Sherry, the only rationale back then when they switched the funding was they said specifically that since they're auditing the superior courts, it could be funded by IMF, but generally this kind of funding is central general fund monies, and that's how this program was originated.
Mm-hmm.
So, Zlatko, do you have any thoughts about that process or about any concerns about that or issues?
The implication is that it becomes absorbed within the.
Let me try it another.
It's not my call per se to say whether we can do that or not. I mean, that's a discussion about priorities and the overall services that the council provides and whether or not this rises to the level of being funded within the appropriation.
So I would just like to make I think we could make a statement that says we're not. We're not recommending a reduction in audits, but we are not prioritizing this money. Just as in the past, it was prioritized out of the Judicial Council budget, we're not able to prioritize it in anymore into the Improvement Fund budget without regard to not recommending reductions in audits, not recommending reduction program. If there's other ways to do it, so we're not making a programmatic statement. We're simply saying, given all of these massive cuts, there's a lot of blood on the ground already today across the board, and we can't prioritize this additional increase in the program or this additional part of the program out of the Improvement Fund and therefore recommend it be reduced.
Kim?
So, I mean, I have maybe a slight twist on that, which is that audit services is a very essential program. It has to happen. I'm on the A&E committee. You know, it's important that this work go forward, these internal audits, the performance audits that look at all the laundry list of things that John mentioned. It's absolutely critical to transparency and accountability in the branch. Having said that, I agree that it does not belong in the IMF fund, and however it landed there 6 or 8 or 10 years ago, we will probably never know now. But one of the things that strikes me is that we have $38 million of general fund money in the IMF fund now, and if we were going to say this expense doesn't belong in the IMF fund, I mean, one option would be to say $660,000 ought to come out of the IMF fund, but $660,000 of general fund revenue ought to get shifted back to the general fund and take the money and sort of cost neutral on that side if, in fact, if the problem is that the general fund doesn't have the money to fund this, and this is what we consider to be a critical service, that's one way of ensuring its sustainability.
So I would just think that goes outside of our scope.
Yeah, I like the idea of going back to our principles and saying if it's not appropriate for IMF, where? And it does seem to me that if we do have a central administrative office, I think, okay, sorry, we have a centralized
operational
staff, now that we don't call them administrative office, but we do have a central office that performs key core functions for the branch. This is clearly one of them.
But I would also say, Sherry, that at the point, and I don't know what year it was, $38 million flowed out of the general fund into the IMF because the IMF was broke and was doing functions that the IMF should probably have never been doing. You know, that there's an opportunity, I think, for a conversation there about if we're going to try to realign expenses and programs in the right place, then along with saying, well, we're washing our hands of this expense in IMF, we have to create a solution in the destination of that very critical service. So you know, $38 million came to the IMF from the general fund because the IMF was broke. I'm assuming that's why it happened.
It wasn't.
Was modernization. It funded all of
the
okay.
Yeah, it went the other way. Okay.
So it was
all right.
A core funding source, and the improvement fund is the one that had all these other revenues. So now that you put them together.
I see.
We had that list of all those programs from back in 99, 2000.
All right. Well, so I misunderstood the origin of that money, but I still say that this is a program that we can't just say we don't think it belongs here, and so therefore no funding.
Well, that's what I would recommend.
If I can, I mean, the staff that goes with this funding, along with the other audit staff, is still not enough to, as you guys know, because the trial court audits can only be done, I think, once every 4 or 5 years. And there should be a more frequent cycle, if you will, of audits. Because, like, on the state agencies, FSMA's done every other year. And absent these audits, what I would not want, especially because, like, you know, the last couple of council meetings, we've had some not very pleasant audits and you know, things that have occurred is that, you know, it's, we're cutting this because trial courts don't want themselves to be audited.
No, we're not cutting, Jody. Let me clarify.
Okay.
One of the discussions we had is we know that it's kind of messy with some general fund, some IMF, some trial court trust fund. And one of the things we thought that would be helpful is to say if there are core functions that belong to the central office, like auditing, we would recommend to the council that, as Stephen nicely said it, it's not a priority of IMF, or if you look at the LAO report, it doesn't fit within those guidelines because it's an ongoing operational expense. We're just merely saying we wouldn't cut audits. We think audits are valuable, but we think it belongs with the central office function and, you know, funding out of general funds.
So Stephen, Judge Smith, and then Judge Earle. You're done? Judge Smith?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I mean, we sort of shift in and out of the conversation about the general fund money, and depending on how important or critical, you know, we think the function is, but unless those things came over with line items, it's really hard to talk about what ought to be, you know, general, what should go with general fund money and what shouldn't. I mean, it was like a ton of general fund money came in. We had a lot of different functions, and none of which are specifically assigned to a particular thing. And I think it's very hard to have a conversation about what ought to be in or out. I think that, I mean, I agree that we wouldn't want to cut audits. But
no.
if we're going to be consistent with what we've been doing, then we have to talk about what belongs in the IMF fund and what doesn't.
Right.
And this, I think this clearly doesn't, as much as some of the other things that we've talked, all of which have been very painful this
mm-hmm.
afternoon. So.
So are we suggesting, though, to reduce the dollar?
No.
I think
no.
We're not talking about
no.
the dollar. It's just the function. It just doesn't belong in the IMF.
Right.
That was not critical.
Right.
Yeah. General.
I think is the recommendation then that, well, the recommendation to the Budget Committee and then to the Council would be that this, the funding for this program be absorbed from the general fund rather than the IMF.
Right.
Okay. So if the Council General says no, then is our recommendation to eliminate the funding for it or just absorb it?
So
let me, because I want to understand, what does it mean, recommend to go to general fund?
What does that mean? Where's that pot of money?
But that's not what I was suggesting.
Okay, what do you
think? My recommendation was looking at the improvement fund. Already, Joey, today we have been slashing and burning.
Right.
So, as we applying that same level, and I, by the way, I've been on the record having, I used to be over it, I'm on the record saying they do a great job, it's a valuable program, and this is a component, and it is a historical vestige. Decisions were made to shift it out of the judicial account, well, AOC budget at the time.
Half of it.
Put it on the part of it, just
half.
This piece of it. But right now, as we're trying to figure out what gets funded, so it's not to say, my statement was simply, we're not making a recommendation about the program and the value of the program. We're simply saying, in prioritizing improvement fund, we don't believe that fits within the priority given the substantial challenge that we have right now. And it's not to say, council, go find the money somewhere else or move it. We're saying it's a valuable program, but we don't, we're looking at the improvement fund. And so the recommendation that I was suggesting was, that it be, that no funding for the audit program be out of the improvement fund at this point.
I just want you to be aware, though, that there is not any other pot of money, and as a result, everything that you are moving to go that way will be cut. So I just, I mean,
there's no other fund too. I mean, there is a general fund, right? And it you don't have any money in it. But the fact is, the decisions have to be made there. That are made here in terms of prioritizing.
And the other thing, too, which is why I've been driving Stephen and Zlatko crazy, is I believe there's a total cost for most programs. And some of those total costs are general fund, trial court trust fund, and IMF. And we can't, it feels like we can't get to that because if some of them are eliminated that include components of all three, then it does loosen up some general fund money. But anyway. So at some point, I think, you know, the total cost in a real clean spreadsheet would be ideal, but we don't have that. So I don't know what that means.
So I'll make the motion then that this not be funded out of the improvement fund.
A second.
So Stephen brought the motion. Who second? Jose? Someone over here?
Doesn't matter.
Any further discussion? Yes.
I'm still not clear on what will fund this important function.
Yes.
I mean, I understand that, I think everybody agrees that there is tremendous value to having this particular function. If we move it out of this fund,
where does it go?
Well, so the Judicial Council will have to sit down, their staff, and say, where is this in priority of everything else, like we've been doing in the trial court? If it's important to them, something else may change. If it's not,
But we're not talking about the function, David, the function is funded. It's funded right now by general fund and a piece from the improvement fund. We're simply saying the piece in the improvement fund, we're not recommending that.
Okay.
That's why Jody's comment about it's going to impact the number of audits that can be done in any given year. So it's going to have an impact. It's not eliminating the function. If the council says there is no more money, there's nowhere to go, if it's not out of the improvement fund, we're not going to be able to fund, there's still an audit program.
Is there an obligation to perform a certain number of audits per year?
Well, there are best practices for organizations. In the executive, it's every other year. And we are at every 4 to 5 years.
And can I just say, if we cut $660,000 out of this program, which is, I guess, 4 FTEs, and there, I don't know how many FTEs there are in total, 8 FTEs, let's say, if there's half that out of general funding, then we're going to go from having audits every 4 to 5 years to audits every 8 to 10 years, which in the climate that we're in is, I think, a political disaster. I really have to strongly.
But going back to our principles.
I get our principles.
Appropriate for IMF? That's what
it is not appropriate for IMF.
Yep.
But if we are going to move it out of IMF, I think, and if Zlatko and Jody say if we do that, that is the putting the nail in the coffin of the program, or the nail in the coffin of some other program that's funded out of the general fund, then I think we have to really think about this. Audits, you know, it's the favorite word in the judicial branch.
Let me give you an example. I mean, it may not be a nail in the coffin because, you know, I can think of several different changes that took place pre this Chief Justice, like in 08 when the fiscal crisis hit. The only example that comes to my head, because I think this we're going to end up being in like this little vicious cycle, which is what I'm afraid of, because we're going to run out of time before June 30th hits all of our doorsteps. In 08, and maybe Stephen, you might recall, my understanding is that, as an example, like the PJ Advisory Committee and SEAC Advisory Committee and the staff that support that committee, it was paid out of TCPF. But because of the severe cuts to the trial courts, then somebody here said, let's see if we can absorb that. So when we go through that entire drill, I mean, my vicious cycle is, are we just going to then say, okay, this goes back to the TCTF, this goes to IMF, we'll absorb this, and then the crap just keeps coming back. Do you know what I'm saying? And there's got to be a better way to do this together.
Well, I'm going to offer a technical budgeting option, is that if we aren't spending the $150 this year and we won't spend $150 next year, then we can count $300,000 and that benefits in terms of the bottom line number a little bit something without this whole thing happening. I mean,
that's an option.
Because you save the current year money.
Why are we making principles if we have exceptions to principles?
I'm not sure that I understood what you were saying, Zlatko.
But in our expenditure plan and the fund condition that we talked about,
yep,
there was an assumed expenditure of $150,000. John says he's not spending that. And he talked about how he's not going to spend the $150 next year. So what you do is you assume you're not going to spend the $150, so the fund balance goes up a little bit. So that means that our target shrinks by $150. And then if you approve to not fund the $150 again next year, then that also helps. So it's a $300,000 benefit just from a technical budgeting standpoint, if we want to at least get something without getting into the throes of this discussion about.
All right. So right now we have a motion on the table that has been seconded, and that motion is to indicate that it is not a priority for the IMF fund. Is that the substance of your motion, Stephen, that has been seconded? Any final discussion?
Just clarification, in practical terms, does that mean that this would be sort of like a contingency because Judicial Council can come back and say, notwithstanding your recommendation, thank you very much, we still want you?
Oh, sure they could.
The council is allowed to decide what the
sure.
Yeah. They can also
put it right
say,
back into the IMF.
They can also say, we'll accept your recommendation, but when they prioritize what they've paid from what we're calling the general fund, say it doesn't. We're not going to
pay it.
So that's
but it
that's
also, awesome. I mean, it also means we did our job here, which is part of what we said from the beginning is certain things should come out of the IMF fund. Certain
right.
things seems like it's part of the core function. So I think we're doing our job here.
Sure.
And I get Kim's point, and I agree with you. Sensitive area is something that we want to be transparent on, but it also, in my view, doesn't belong in IMF function. So how the JC chooses to prioritize that, we've kind of done our job here, and I think the JC will.
And also, I don't want to lose that fact that the law does provide that it's supposed to be the state doing financial audits, and I get your point, John, that your program does more than the financial, but and I don't know why they didn't pick up their job on that, probably budget, but we're making up the difference out of the IMF fund, and so that's another alternative as well. Because that's what the law provides for.
All right, Rebecca, and then we're going to call the question.
Okay, so I would perhaps offer the idea that maybe we should separate out the two issues again, because I think the contract is actually valued at pretty much, I mean, by looking at the survey and looking at what is happening, it's obvious we're not using the contract and therefore not going there, but audit services is ranked very high, and if we use our criteria, no, it's not the place. However, in several other areas, it does qualify. It's a high value to the branch. We said we were not going to incur any increases by moving things
you know, there's a certain mandate or an expectation of a certain number of audits. And so I would offer up that we separate the two perhaps and we address the contract and that we start, you know, we give the strong recommendation that we start working on moving the core function back into the trial court trust or back into the branch budget, but not necessarily eliminate it because it is a very highly valued service in terms of the survey.
Are you saying eliminate the audit contract but
right.
recommend the audit service?
Right, separate
the
two. I mean, we joined the conversation. It's really the same service, but really if you separate them back out. And I completely agree that the criteria, it does not fit here, but it does have an impact, and it does a very strong political impact, by the way, of transparency. And I think it does have a service level impact, and I think it does have a mandated service issue associated with it. And so that's what I would offer up.
Judge Johnson.
We agreed when we started this meeting that we're going to do our part in unraveling that ball of yarn. And that's what Stephen's motion does. It doesn't preclude us from making an additional motion with a recommendation that we keep this service somehow for the branch, but that it shouldn't be funded by the IMF. And we can make that recommendation. We can direct the budget committee to search around and also the judicial council.
All right. We have a motion, and it is seconded, and it is combining both of them, is it, Stephen? Was that the intention of your motion? All right. Or was that the intention of the second, Jose? Yep. Judge Earl?
The recommendation includes both the audit contract and audit services.
That's my understanding of the motions presently before us.
I don't have an opposition to taking
Let's do it separately then. Let's first talk about the contracting piece.
Right. Because I think that we can eliminate.
All right. All in favor of eliminating the contracting piece?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? So that portion passes. Now the second piece,
audit services,
which is the audit services, your motion remains the same then?
You restate. No funding for what you're calling a lot of service by the
IMF. Oh. But to not recommend a reduction, to still put a high priority on importance.
It's a valued service. They do a great job, but no funding for it out of the IMF.
All right. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Any opposition?
No.
One no?
Two no's.
Two no's.
Three no's.
Three no's. It passes with three no's.
Wow, that was a long one.
All
Thank
right.
you, John.
What is what is next then, Sherry?
Just to clarify, are we going to reflect a reduction of $360,000 for the audit person? Or are we holding it flat and it's just more of a institutional council. I mean, are we actually recommending a reduction? It was a zero out in the improvement fund.
I think it was a reduction. The impact, the consequence of the motion is a reduction.
Okay. Enterprise policy and planning, statewide development, which is line 34, if I got that right.
Is it a point of order, I guess, Madam Chairman? Is it appropriate to make the follow-on motion now while we're considering the reductions in the budget, or can we table that to make a recommendation for seeking funding, including a budget change proposal or some other source of funding for continuing this service?
So do I understand your question is as it relates to the audit services piece?
Yes.
Should we add a recommendation that that the funding for it come from somewhere? Is that what you're suggesting, like a BCP?
Alternate source. We don't lose the service.
Any thought on that?
I'm looking to them to see if there's any value in that.
From your motion, you want to accept that?
That one's already
the new motion. I think it's important to take into account what I identifying and what Ms. Patel was identifying, that there are political consequences to voting this service out. What we're really saying is that this fund can't support that. That doesn't mean that function shouldn't happen. We want to communicate that very clearly, that we support the function, not from here.
As a core function.
Yes.
So I think that that language should be included in the recommendation.
Okay.
So our Scribner's over there, you got that, gentlemen? Okay. Thank you, Steve.
So the next, Sherry, is
Enterprise Policy and Planning, which is line 34.
So this was also one of the IT programs taken to the council in February that was worked on by a group of executive officers and CIOs. And the recommendation that the council approved was that the this involves the Oracle branch-wide license. Which includes four components: enterprise database, advanced security. I don't know what all these mean. BEA WebLogic Suite and Identity Manager. And the recommendation from the Budget Committee and that the Council approved was that the Council should, the Judicial Council Technology Committee should determine if the license agreement is aligned with current business needs or requires renegotiation. And so that would be an effort to dissect that branch-wide license agreement and determine whether or not it can be renegotiated at a lower cost, but that will take between 12 and 18 months for the Judicial Council Technology Committee and the CIOs to be able to agree and kind of dissect it.
And that was this February that just happened last month.
And Mark, are you on the phone? This is Jose.
Yes, I'm here.
Do we know how many cores or how many licenses have been purchased under this agreement?
So, Jose, this is an enterprise license agreement that allows any judicial branch entity unlimited use of those four modules. So we do know from a judicial council perspective that CCPOR, Phoenix, V2, V3 all require these licenses. What we don't know, and why this would take 18 months to 2 years, is we don't know to what extent individual local courts have used the enterprise license. And so when we talked to Rob O'Young and his group, they recognized this as being something that would take some time to do. Short of doing a survey, what Oracle has recommended, and they are happy to do this, is that they would come in to each local court and do audits, systematic audits, where they would go through all the equipment. And so that didn't go over very well with Rob's group. So I think that's why it's going to take some time to figure out, you know, how to potentially renegotiate this agreement. In the meantime, my personal opinion after looking at this agreement, which is several years old now, and looking at current Oracle pricing, is that it's the branch is still getting an incredible good deal out of having this opportunity. Now, that may change as courts move away from products that use Oracle as an underlying component. That may change, and I think that was the valuable input that Rob and the other CIOs included in this process.
So, Mark, this is Kim. Is Phoenix using Oracle? It is it not?
No.
It is. That's correct.
Oh, Phoenix is using Oracle.
I'm sorry, did you say it wasn't, Mark?
Yes, this is Mark. Phoenix requires the use of several of these components that are included in the Oracle Enterprise License Agreement.
So aside from any other court using it, your best assessment is that we are getting our money's worth for the $5.2 million because we're getting an 80% discount as it is, and for what you're using it, for Phoenix, CCPOR, V2, and V3, we're getting our money's worth, correct?
That's correct, Jose, and we do know that several of the courts are using this for local applications, but we can't quantify that. We just know that they are.
So, Mark, this is Judge Earl. I noticed that in the materials that you did not recommend a reduction to the program, and I just wondered what would be the impact of a reduction to the program.
This is an all-or-nothing deal, Judge. Essentially, most of this is that contract, and so we either pay the maintenance on it, on these licenses, or we don't. And since we don't have an alternative until we complete that 18 to 24-month process, it's staff's recommendation that we don't jeopardize Phoenix and CCPOR and whatever application the courts are running.
Support maintaining funding at this level and give the CIOs an opportunity to examine this next step of possible renegotiation.
I would second.
So the motion is to maintain as is with the understanding that the CIOs would evaluate, and we understand it'll take a minimum of a year to complete that evaluation. Any further discussion on that? Stephen?
I think it's the IT office is at the 15 to 16 level, they're recommending maintaining their impact. At the 14 to 16 level, actually, they can be reduced to $48 to get into what they're proposing at the 15 to 16 level.
Take the lower amount.
Yeah, we take the lower
amount. As I said, the lower amount.
That's what I thought you said.
That's
totally
what I think David said, yes.
All right, so it's the lower amount, and the lower amount is seconded, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any objection? The motion passes.
Okay, the next one is Judicial Council's Court-Ordered Debt Task Force, which is line 48. $25,000. Is this mostly to pay for the group to meet?
No. Well, they didn't meet. They haven't met this year.
It is to cover that. But as I understand it, there's a statutory obligation for this group to convene periodically to address this particular issue. Is that correct?
Do they meet by phone?
Yeah, by WebEx.
And by phone.
But I mean, the statute doesn't require a live meeting, right?
No.
Just a meeting, just a committee and a meeting. I think I looked at the statute.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I would tell you that the membership has changed from year to year with legislative re-elections and return limits and such. And there has been tremendous benefit to meeting in person. They don't meet very often, as SLACO did indicate. And it would be difficult to conduct a meeting with people that you've never met. So,
did they propose a reduction?
They did.
They did.
Well, I mean, it's a 15% reduction and a 25% reduction.
This is the 140.
Is this another one that comes to Scotia and does this for long and IMF?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, it was added last year. 2 years ago by the committee at a request to just court order debt and collections, and so just reminding of the folks as to how it got added, because it was not funded previously.
It wasn't funded, period?
No, it was, the meetings were paid for with JCC budget, and then was asked if there could be some $25,000.
So it was a recommendation by Judicial Council staff
that was adopted by the committee.
Well, you can talk about $25,000.
Trial court from the fifth. If you collect more, it goes to trust fund.
We distribute more appropriately and not get hit by CF charges.
You said this is their meetings are mandated. Is that what you're saying?
The committee is mandated. The committee.
We haven't met this year at all.
Right. So we should book the $25,000 in savings for the current year, and that already helps.
But the bulk of it is staffing for that program.
No, it's all travel. Travel.
It's all travel.
It's $25,000, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And this is Olivia Lawrence, if I may. The bulk of that funding is actually for, it is for travel. It is for the four locations where we go out to do the revenue distribution training. And it pays for not only the hotels and the travel itself, but also for the catering that is provided to the courts participating in the training. And it also provides for the WebEx and the conference lines.
So that's $25,000 is what we're with the request?
With a 15% reduction on top of that, right?
Correct.
I move that we continue to provide this out of IMF. There is a, obviously, indirect benefit to all courts, and it is required, mandated to have one, and it's a minimal amount of $25,000.
So, but you would take the 15% reduction to that?
Correct.
I'll second that motion.
The 25% reduction gets it to $18,750. That's a $5,200 reduction. It seems like if they don't meet,
if they're not meeting
at all,
the 25, I'll make the amendment to the 25.
Right.
Well,
25.
Yeah. How much is catering, and how much is, and how much of this can be done by WebEx without the travel?
Yeah. So the motion then is to reduce it by 25%.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes, the training includes court people as well as your local counterparts, the collections on some of the courts. So it's a big training.
The last 2 years is the revenue distribution training for your revenue officers.
By statute, the task force includes other members besides judicial officer, judicial staff at California State Association of Counties, California Cities, State Controller, Franchise Tax Board.
So your recommendation is a 25 plus 2% reduction. That's been
no,
25% reduction.
25%
the scenario under 25%.
So the motion is 25% reduction off the 25,000. Is there a second?
Okay, next.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any objection? The motion passes.
What's the dollar value of that? The reduction of the
250. All right. Next on the list
is the California Language Access Plan, but I don't think there are any asks for next year if I'm looking at this correctly, right?
Right.
Okay, so we can skip that. And we've already taken care of the workers' comp reserve, so we're up to interactive software, self-represented litigants, electronic forms.
That's number two.
That is, yep.
Okay. 151. So there's two proposed alternatives, a 15% reduction. Good question.
2.2 million.
How much?
2.2.
Oh, here it is. So,
two options to get a 15% reduction is one, continue to pay $40,000 for the licensed server. I don't understand the rest of that.
So currently they use $20,000, I think, for a consultant. So what they do is they would have to keep their fixed cost for licensing, and they would reduce their consultant work from $20,000 to $11,000 for developing the form.
And then the second option is to have all courts pay for a proportionate share of the cost.
Right.
So I have a question about the consultant part. So is there someone on the line? Charlie, are you on
Charlie.
The line?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Hi, Charlie. It's Kim Turner.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. So currently, is the $20,000 more than adequate to make the changes? I mean, I know we're changing in judicial counsel. We're changing the DV forms every single cycle, it seems, and many of the other forms that I think are used most often by our self-help litigants. So.
The $20,000 is not adequate. We've got about 9 courts lined up with forms that they want to work on that'll be they'll be developing for statewide use. So it costs about $5,000 to do a form, depending on how complex. And you're right, the DV changes are very numerous, and that'll come up again in the DV interactive software later. Excuse me, later.
So what you're saying is that the $20,000 level that it's funded at right now is inadequate to even meet the existing need for updating and creating new forms that are available through this program.
That's correct. And, of course, how inadequate depends on how many changes there are to the forms, what kind of legislation is passed each year.
So looking at how many people use these forms, that they're available throughout California, that they do address a need in all of our courts, among all of our self-represented litigants, I would recommend no funding reduction of this very modest program. Certainly I'd love to increase the funding, but we're not going to do that today, but I would certainly recommend that we leave the funding alone at the current level, which is $60,000, and I would make that motion.
All right, so the motion is leave it as is, and it has been seconded by Judge Lee. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any objection? Motion carries. Next item.
Okay. Adobe Lifecycle Reader Extension.
Said they can't afford it, and so they asked if it could be funded at the state level, and so it
was proposed to put in here, and that's how it's been funded out of the IMF the last couple of years as a result of the request that all courts, I think, have access to these.
Does anyone use them?
Charlie, are you still on the line?
So this is it's Mark. Was that Sherry? So
yes.
This, again, this is something that Orange and several other courts implemented for the council forms and local court forms to automate the intake and completion by litigants of these forms. 2 million of these forms were in family law. 5.5 million were downloaded from the council's website. It definitely aids in, or is an essential part, frankly, of e-filing. So courts that do e-filing, it's important to have. There's a difference between this and what Charlie was talking about, that this is the software to allow for that automation, whereas what Charlie was talking about was creating judicial council forms and saving them in a savable, or allowing them to be savable. So this is something that Orange and the other courts have done. The contract is actually still in Orange Superior Court's name. We are working with the court to try to get that moved in the next couple months to the Judicial Council so that it's easier for other courts to take advantage of this. I think it will be important as more courts move to case management systems that incorporate e-filing that this be available to them.
I agree with that. This seems like an appropriate place for to be funded out of IMF. It's something that is involved in technology and case management systems as we transition and e-filing. I support no reduction in this one.
Second.
Any further discussion? So the motion is to leave it as is. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Did you have a question?
I just wanted to provide some information as it relates to this. There are actual estimated costs for the contract. 15-16 are actually a little bit higher, so it's actually like $141,000.
$3,000 more, approximately $4,000 more.
It's about $7,000 more.
I mean, I know we have a no increase rule, but to me that seems inconsequential. So with that, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any objection? Passes.
Okay. Trial court performance measures study.
What's the line item here?
16.
Thank you.
I think he said 16. Yep. Yeah. What was the page for the program description, Stephen?
125.
175. Okay. So is this for travel costs for the group that is actually doing RAS? Is that what this is?
Yep.
Okay, so let's see. Line.
And this is Leah Rose Goodwin from the Office of Court Research on the phone for any questions about this item.
Thank you, Leah, for being here.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree. So make a motion.
I move that we maintain the amount of budget.
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor of keeping it as proposed?
Aye.
Any objection? Motion passes.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you, Leah.
Glad to be of help. Thank you.
So CFCC Publications.
Line number 3, pages 39 and 152.
What line, Stephen? I can't hear you. Oh, I see. Got it.
And line and 152?
This is Don Will from CFCC, if there are any questions.
Thank you.
Rationale. This is Jose. What's the rationale to continue to fund it out of IMF or, you know, out of the draft program, for instance?
There's no money there. We just had a Core Dependency Council meeting on Friday, so we're broke in every account, unfortunately.
So this is Kim. I just have a question. I know, Don, that not just court. You know, judges and court staff use this system, but you know, all the dependency council and, you know, welfare, CASA, all kinds of folks use
yes.
this system. Is there an opportunity to, and how much money are we talking about?
60. Yeah. Charge them.
$20,000.
$20,000.
So the reduction proposed would be, what, $3,000?
So, now that I see the negligible amount of money, it's hard to make the case that, you know, you charge a subscription fee or have some, you know, fee for every time you log on or, you know.
The real question in my mind is it appropriate
yeah.
for IMF? You know,
yeah,
I keep going back to our principles, and
yeah,
they're all valuable, but does it belong ongoing, ongoing publication for an operational system that's not related to automation, right?
Right.
So would there even be a mechanism, Don, to charge people, you know, a log-on fee or a subscription fee or some way to have this become self-supporting rather than, you know, saying it belongs in the general fund or TCTF or, you know, it's such a small amount of money, but I don't think anyone, at least I don't certainly have any quarrel with the value. I know that it is a valued thing that all kinds of folks in court use.
It's certainly possible. I think one of the rationales for making it free to these folks is that many of the judges and the attorneys in rural areas, small courts, have told us that they're so strapped that this is really their only resource to get to legal publications and to the case law.
Can you distinguish between CFCC educational program and CFCC publications?
Yes, CFCC publications is actually just the $20,000 that's devoted to this website, CalDog. CFCC Programs is an educational program that supports the travel for judicial officers and some other costs for our Beyond the Bench and our Family Law Education Programs and the Youth Summit.
Pedro, you raised your hand.
Well, I'm wondering, is this a cost that the trial courts themselves could absorb, that they want to provide it to their judicial officers in dependency, it would be something that they pay the subscription for?
I mean, the only issue with that is that there are a lot of non-trial court people that are logging on to the system, attorneys, social workers, and so forth. So, I mean, if it was court to kind of sign up people from your particular county that could log on. You know, I mean, it just becomes kind of cumbersome for a $20,000 overall expense.
But how are the recipients of this logging in? I mean, is this like a...
The website.
The website.
So I'm new to a dependency assignment, so I've used it, but not extensively, but it's an online resource. For, that gives you, you know, cases and briefs and things like that. I think it's, I don't know how much it's used by judicial officers. I think it's used by attorneys quite a bit. I don't.
So I guess that was going to be my question. Is there some way someone on the line can tell us how much it is used? And can they distinguish use by judicial officer versus others?
Don, are you able to tell us that?
Yes, we know that we have about 4,000 subscribers, and judicial officers make up 270 of those subscribers. I'd point out that that's almost the entire juvenile dependency bench statewide. There are 2,300 attorneys and then a number of others, including the court volunteers. We don't distinguish in our stats who logs on, but we do get about 1,000 page views a day.
Wow. That's a lot. If the court doesn't host this, doesn't provide this, is there a means by which the attorneys themselves could seek a pay a fee to subscribe to it?
I mean, nothing would preclude it. I think that we, our main goal, although there's many attorneys logged on, our main goal is to provide the function to the judicial officers.
And it sounds like the judicial officers are accessing it.
Yes. We train extensively at the Institute and other places.
He said he couldn't distinguish who's using it. Every subscribe.
1,000 hits done
a day.
Could I make a motion?
Yes. Yes.
That we fund CalDog at the current level, $20,000 for the upcoming year, but with the idea that CFCC spend that year trying to figure out if there's a different way to deliver this service through subscription or through some other, you know, pay-as-you-go mechanism, so that by next year it's no longer, you know, make it a one-year funding proposal, one time only, and with the idea that by 2016-17, it's got to have a cost recovery model attached to it, or, you know, some other way to manage it.
So there's a motion and a second that it is a one-year continuance only, and then they can see if they can figure out another way to finance it. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any objection? Passes.
Okay, next item, HR court investigation.
Item 22.
Yes.
So, you know, our court actually uses this service, and we used it very recently, but I have to say it really is sort of a core HR function that probably doesn't belong in IMF. I mean, it is really one of those services that courts use, and I think it's important. I noticed that there were a number of comments that, you know, well, find your own investigators, whatever, but I could just tell you from our perspective, having an independent investigator appointed by another body in a situation where it's usually a pretty hot HR situation is invaluable. So as much as it hurts my heart, I think we ought to make some, I think we should not fund it through IMF, but should maybe make a recommendation not to discontinue funding, but to try to, you know, not unlike audit services, which I know is not quite, doesn't rise to that level. But it's one of those things that we need to find some equilibrium in our budget so that things are permanently funded one place and the IMF is actually left to do whatever the business of IMF is. Whatever
we finally decide. Zero it out of the IMF.
So I'm suggesting actually that maybe we zero it out. I think to be consistent.
This year or down line?
say period.
Well, I'm just discussing it. Now, I actually haven't made a motion. I was just sort of wondering how other people feel about it. I mean, like I said, we use it a lot, and I think a lot of courts do. I think there would be support for including it, but I just think that, I don't know if this year or next year we should zero it out, but I think.
There are alternatives.
Kim and then David and then Judge Lee.
So I feel, I agree with you, it does not belong in IMS. I also don't believe that it's really a branch expense. I think it's a trial court expense. And I think that it's great to have a repository of experts that could be maintained by, you know, judicial counsel staff, HR division. If you need an investigator, you can call them. They can give you the name of someone who's, you know, so that you deal with the perception issues of hiring your friends to do your investigations. But I strongly believe that this should be a trial court expense, not a general fund, TCTF, or anybody's problem, but the court that needs the investigation. So that's my feeling about it.
Is that a motion?
I would make a motion, but I think we have more discussion.
Yeah. David and then Judge Lee.
So I am also a receiver of the services that are provided there, and I do also agree that those services do not belong, the funding of it, not belong in this particular area and should be borne by each trial court. But the other point that I was really going to make, but Kim beat me to the punch, is the identification of those entities that we can actually contact to perform those investigations would be great if the judicial counsel team could maintain that responsibility of identifying the resource to all of the trial courts to use, because this is a service that will not go away. We need it, no doubt. And so having, I don't know, if doing so would cost anything, and if it does, perhaps we can figure out a different source to fund that particular responsibility.
Judge Lee and then Judge Earl.
And looking at attachment 3D, if this program was eliminated or reduced, does your court have an alternative to this service? And it's noting that there are 30 courts that said no. So while I agree, number one, it should not be an IMF function, it is another core function, but again, we're running the same problem, which is if we don't fund it or find some way to deal with it, it goes to the council, and then does it go into the ozone because it's something else? I mean, I think if we're going to consider at some point not funding it, I'm wondering whether or not we should fund it partially to give everybody fair warning and to give account this particular division time to figure out how to maybe act with less of an expense as a central repository so courts can still draw on it, because you have 30 courts that have said no.
You know, I caught that, because if you look at page 119, the most in the last 2 years, the most courts that have used it is 10. And they're pretty much the same, kind of, some of them are the same courts. So I didn't understand that either. I think they were confused. I think they were confused, quite honestly.
I have kind of mixed feelings. On one hand, I kind of do feel like it's a trial court function, but on the other hand, you know, we use it. Unfortunately, we've had to use it a lot, but neither here nor there, but if there's 30 courts going to be left, I don't understand how it interprets this either exactly.
Yeah, I think they're confused.
David, you wanted to comment on that?
Today, if that service was eliminated, we don't have an option, but it doesn't certainly mean that we wouldn't reach out to a particular entity to provide that information. So practically speaking, that's right, we don't have anything else, but functionally, we will be able to obtain the services to provide that service.
We've hired lawyers.
Judge Earl?
Following up on what Judge Lee said, if you look at the benefit by cluster, I noticed that 25 of the courts, I think it's utilized more by the smaller courts. That's my concern.
Look on page 119, though. That's not what it shows. Which is why I think they're confused when they answered the survey.
So do we have Scott on the line?
Scott Gardner here.
So, Scott, hi, this is Judge Earl, and I we're talking about the human resources, the court investigation service that's provided. Can you tell us kind of how, what
size courts utilize this service? Do we get more use from this from the consistent use from the small, medium-sized courts, or is it vice versa?
Well, I mean, it's really a mix, and I know we had prepared a chart the other day, and I'm looking for it now, but I know it ranges from sometimes we got, you know, Santa Clara, Alameda have done it over the course of the past 3 or 4 years, and then sometimes we get smaller courts asking for it. So it really...
Here's why I ask, because I think small courts don't have an HR division. I'm not sure they have a very robust HR division in their on-site. And maybe Judge Johnson can speak to this. So do they turn to this program for assistance?
If you look at page 119.
Shows you the courts, and what you do for an investigation is you almost never use your own HR people.
Yeah,
we hire outside lawyers. We hire outside people to do the investigation.
Right, and I think small courts rely on this service to do their outside investigation.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right.
Santa Cruz has used it twice in the last 2 years. We've used this.
So, Judge Johnson, in a small court, what do you do?
Well, we haven't had a problem. We haven't had the problem since I've been of meeting.
So it takes good leadership.
They may not have that resource. That's my
point.
Do an outside investigation.
That's my point.
Hypothetically,
but you hire one.
All judicial counsel.
Well, my impression is there's other resources available. I mean, even if you're living in a remote area, HR investigative services are really everywhere. There's a lot of resources.
County.
Stephen?
So I heard somebody was recommending that it be a court expense, and that could be a recommendation to shift this to a reimbursable item under trial court trust fund, and so that they just charge. And so then courts have an option. Do we go with our county? Do we go with outside non-governmental? Do we pay for what judicial counsel costs?
David?
And just to speak to that point, Scott, if you could help me out here, we don't have a single entity that provides a service for the council. It's actually people who have been identified that can be retained, could be retained by the council team. So let's say a law firm of Johnson and Smith gets retained. They do the investigation. They send the council the bill. That bill then, in this scenario, would be paid for by the court who requested it. Is that something that's realistically possible?
Well, I think it is something that not every court budgets for that. I mean, obviously, we budget and allocate an amount of money each year for all requests across the state that might fall under this category. These investigations, as you can see from this table that I think people are looking at, you know, it all ranges. So some investigations are just a couple thousand dollars, maybe $5,000-$6,000. Others range up to $20,000. So you have about an average of $12,000-$13,000 per investigation, depending on which you get. So it depends on how complex it is. I will say right now, the advantage for the courts is they can come to us and they can say, hey, will you do it? And we might send our own people out to do it. Or they can say, you know what, I don't feel it's appropriate for your labor and employee relations officers to do it. So we would like someone from the outside, an independent counsel to do this, because this involves our CEO, or this involves a judge, or this involves somebody very high up in our organization, so we don't want you guys to do it. So, and
right.
Then what we do is we hire outside counsel, and we just oversee what outside counsel is doing.
Right, but I'm just talking about from a functional standpoint, nobody ever plans on having employee investigations by a certain volume and certain cost, but those situations come up, and so it basically turns into a billing situation if, in fact, an entity or investigator is retained by your office for the benefit of a particular court, this costs $2,000. The billing then is submitted to the local child court to use those services, and that would be their responsibility to pay for. So, for better or worse, investigations will continue going forward, and functionally speaking, the costs could be passed along to the requesting court. Is that correct?
That's correct. The one thing I would say is that might create a motivation for a borderline case when they say, well, gee, should we investigate this? Should we not? I mean, there are principles we follow where we'd say we'd recommend an investigation. There might be a situation if we're direct billing the courts, well, just say, why bother doing it? And then,
well, I think that's just a call that the court would need to make. That's a business decision.
And Judge Earl, to answer your question directly, if you look at number of courts receiving direct benefit by cluster, that page, it's page 30. If you go across the line, 7 of 14 said small courts, although this is not consistent with page 119, but I did want to show you. 7 of 14. So on page 30, which is direct benefit by cluster, 7 of 14 said they've had direct benefit. 18 of 21, cluster 2. 9 of 12, cluster 3. So they're the highest, and 3 of 9. So really, the small courts are only 50%. They're actually a smaller group, either because they have such excellent management they don't need it, or they're using counties. Because the counties have huge HR departments, and sometimes we're reciprocal in our county, and we don't charge each other. So it could be that, too.
So did you make a motion?
No, there's no motion yet.
This is Scott Gardner. I just add one other thing I wanted to add is this is very random in the way this takes place because of the fact that, a court will call and sometimes they'll say, hey, we want your services. And I'll say, hey, that's great, but I have all my people in the field right now, so I can't do it.
And then I say,
okay, but I can have an outside firm do it. And then we'll do it that way. So a lot of these are situations where I just have all my people otherwise occupied. We can't do it. And that's why they show up on the list.
Judge Harmon, I move that we move this to trial court reimbursement.
Second.
I didn't hear anything. Move it to the trial court trust fund, and it'll be a reimbursable event.
Yes.
That is the motion, which has been seconded. Any further dialogue on the issue? All in favor?
Aye.
Any objection? The motion passes.
Okay.
Can we get an update on where we are on our number?
2 million.
It's still two.
These are such numbers. Because the last several, we've taken no reduction, and then once, yeah.
Can we make ourselves feel good?
We're not making
any progress
here. A big ticket item on there.
Yes.
You.
What would you propose we?
So I am hoping that we can talk about the security
grants.
Security grants.
What item is that? You know.
That would be line item number 17, and that's a $1.2 million expenditure.
Trial court security grants, line item 17. Does anybody know the page that the description is on?
I can just kick off the conversation. This in no way, shape, or form suggests that I'm not sympathetic to the safety of any judge or staff. But as we're looking at all of the different things that we're examining for possible savings, I know that a big piece of this budget is used for warranties on magnetometers and perhaps replacement magnetometers and maybe the installation of security cameras in a particular location. While we have been the beneficiaries of some of the grant funding, we do so because it's available, but certainly it would not stop us from installing cameras or, you know, replacing magnetometer equipment because of the importance of what that is. And I will tell you that most of the equipment that we use has been replaced and serviced with on a very, very frequent schedule, and I think it's in pretty good shape. So I wonder if there's a possibility of maybe suspending funding in this particular area for a year, if there's a will and a concurrence that our equipment is in pretty decent shape and possibly gain a year's worth of savings in this area.
That's your motion.
Well, Rebecca's got comments.
Well, I would also suggest that some of this could possibly be separated out as facility modifications or improvements, such as the ballistic glass, the fencing, and that kind of thing. But I definitely agree that this is not the location for security anything.
Yep, yep. So whether it's appropriate or not, yep. I think Colin.
There are actually two programs of allocation. One is the Trailport Security Grant from the IMF, and there's also the replacement screen station allocation, which is a reimbursement from the Trailport Trust Fund. And the replacement screen station's allocation for the Trailport Trust Fund is the one where they give the warranties and the replacement magnetometers. So just to make the distinction between those. So
this here is just to replace equipment?
No, the replacement screen station is
on the Trailport Trust Fund. So
this one is related to other items. I think there's modifications there. I definitely speak to this.
It's new and maintenance.
This is Donna Hershkowitz. I'm happy to provide a little bit more information on this if you'd like.
Sure.
So the trial court security grants are for things like cameras, duress alarms, intrusion alarms, as folks mentioned, ballistic glass, fencing, a variety of those kinds of security measures, parking, secure parking, those kinds of measures that the security team identifies with the court as security problems that the court believes needs to be addressed. It also funds that continuity of person plans.
So I go back up to, you know, our, what do we call them this morning? It seems like a long time ago, principles
and guidelines.
And whether or not it's appropriate for IMF, I think is kind of where I'm stuck.
It sounds as though this is kind of part and parcel of our facility-related security issues and really is more conducive in that area than IMF.
Yep. Is that a motion, Jose?
I'll make a motion that we eliminate this as a priority in IMF funding.
I'll second that. What is the recommendation as to where it's funded?
Facilities mod.
Facilities mod.
So is that... I think, David, when you first raised the issue, you talked about suspending it for a year. The motion sounds like it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't make that motion, but I think the motion that was made is very suitable to what I was hoping to.
Okay, so the motion is to dump it out of IMF, recommend that it go to facilities mod, and that's the second. Any further discussion?
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
So when we say move it to facility mod, you mean move the potential funding up, but we're not moving money over there.
No,
no, no.
No.
The expense.
Yeah.
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any objection?
Come on, let's do the tally.
The motion carries.
Yeah. He's writing down the actions. So that.
We are, $1 million.
Right now,
$1 million,
I think, but
okay,
there in a second.
So, if we're looking on...
Roll.
So, let me ask the group this. Are we wanting to continue? Are we wanting to?
Oh, we're so close.
Let's get going.
Yeah.
So can I ask, since we're taking things out of order, I have two questions. One that goes to the central office concept and one that just doesn't belong here, and I'm not sure what to do about it. So let's start with the bigger one. We did some legal research, actually, and the defense and indemnity of lawsuits against the judicial branch is statutorily a judicial council's function. Yet those funds have been coming out of IMF, and I don't know for how long, if they were moved there at some point, but, I mean, there is clear statutory responsibility vested with the judicial council, and so I don't understand why those amounts are funded out of IMF. Did we ever receive money for those things?
I don't think so.
Are you talking about litigation management program?
No, specifically I'm talking about the judicial defense and the
defense insurance?
Yes.
Yeah. That's for judges.
What I'm saying is that the statute is super clear.
Okay.
It's a judicial council function. Why would we use IMF? And I'll give this to you. It's all the statutory background. Why would we use IMF for that? Especially if we never got money as a branch, it might be that we go back and say, we never got money to do these things.
Is there an IDA?
Let me find it for you.
Have questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a line item
let
number?
Let me find it.
42.
Yeah.
And 44.
And 44. So is Debbie Brown on the phone too?
Yes, I am on the phone. And if I understand correctly, the question was whether or not for the Judicial Performance Defense Insurance, whether the IMF was funded specifically to fund them. Is that correct?
That as well as lit management program, Debbie.
I do not have the history on whether the IMF was specifically stated or added to fund either of those two programs. We just don't have that.
So, you know, for me, I'm not suggesting that this might be the year because, you know, these are big ticket items, but I do think it doesn't fall within the IMF view, and I'll give the statutes to you, but clearly it is 100% a judicial branch responsibility by statute, by government code, 811.9A and B. So, and California Rule of Court 10.202B. So I just don't understand why we put it here.
I would have to assume that the council at some point, and I don't know if it was at the onset of the program or somewhere along the line, and I guess we could do that research. Oh, you have a question? Answer?
No, I do. I think it's okay. The litigation management program, it was originally funded, all the program, the modernization fund was funded by the general fund. It was a BCP approved by the government budget.
It was a BCP, so the general fund?
Yeah, in the
mod fund. Got it.
It was specifically actually asked and put in that fund within the framework of that.
Yeah, that's too bad. As opposed to separate and apart when we got the BCP.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that through the course of time, the council has made allocations, but in this case, there were a number of items that went and went through the budget process. Firmed as that.
That means that I would suggest that we have that list printed and distributed for us, because I think that reiterates the importance of if we were given money for it, it should be a priority for us.
Okay, so then
both the lit management and the judicial performance defense insurance,
even lit management.
But that judicial performance fund seemed like back in, or a line item created back in 1993, I think I read in one of some of the materials here, long, long time ago, I mean, I don't know how it ended up in IMF.
I have no idea.
20
years
ago.
We may
want
to research that for future years, because my point is that if we didn't get funding as a branch, that would be an opportunity for Mr. Hoshino to go say this is a legitimate statutory responsibility of the Judicial Council, and we never got money for it. That's all.
So, Sherry, did you find a statute related to the judicial performance defense insurance as well as litigation management?
There is no statute related to the judicial performance defense insurance. This is Debbie Brown. That was a program that the Judicial Council adopted to assist the trial courts, because at the time it was adopted, some trial courts were paying for insurance for their judges and others were not. So this was a way to get a better cost for the insurance, because all were put under one insurance program, and provide it to all courts so that it wasn't inconsistent with some courts paying for it and some courts not.
So let me read this government code section, because it is somewhat related. 811.9b, the California Rules of Court give the Office of General Counsel the role of carrying out the Judicial Council's responsibility for defense and indemnification of lawsuits against judicial branch entities, to carry out the duty of the Judicial Council to provide for the representation, defense, and indemnification of justices of the courts of appeals, Supreme Court, judges, subordinate judicial officers, CEOs and administrators, trial and appellate court employees, blah, blah, blah. The Office of the General Counsel, under the direction of the Administrative Director of the Courts and General Counsel, must develop, manage, and administer a litigation management program for investigating and resolving all claims and lawsuits. On.
Right.
On.
That's related to the litigation management program.
So our point is not whether it's valuable, it's why it's with IMF. That's what we're talking about today.
Ms. Lotko?
I'm a pencil neck budget person. If you look at line 45 from litigation management, and you look at the actual expenditures, at least for 11-12, they were 3.6. Year-to-date encumbrances from 12-13 are 3.4. There's some time left in 13-14. But it is not approached, at least from the last full year of expenditure, the full amount.
I wouldn't touch it. I'm just saying we need to research if we ever got money for it.
But at least aligning the allocation more closely with actual expenditures is one option, and without some substantial risk of the program.
Are you saying reducing that by?
Let's call it $500,000 to $4 million.
To $4 million.
And it's still higher than the last full year expense. And we're talking about cutting a bunch of other programs.
What I would say is I think that's okay as long as if there's one big
problem.
As the group knows, we would need to come back to you.
There's a history of less expenditure.
Judge Maradona?
I could support that. I think we have evidence that it hasn't approached that $4,500,000.
So I think the key person to ask is Debbie Brown. Is that wise to do based on your knowledge and the fact that we're trying to set a budget for next year?
Yes, we think that it would be fine to cut approximately $400,000 to $500,000, with the understanding that if there is a very large lawsuit, that we would potentially need to come back to get additional funding.
But you don't see anything in your claims history right now that would suggest that that's looming out there?
No.
All right.
I'll make a motion to reduce the litigation management budget by $500,000 to $4 million.
I'll second.
All right.
With the caveat,
with the understanding that if there's a big claim that needs to be addressed, it can be reviewed by the subcommittee and the committee.
Jose.
Debbie Jose here. From a governance perspective, since the rule of court gives a particular litigation management committee authority over this, do you think that this body can make that recommendation, or does it get the suggestion to the litigation management?
Sure, that money.
No, I think this body can make that recommendation.
So the motion is to reduce it by $500,000. That's been seconded. with the understanding that should a claim arise in the future that would require us to relook at it, it could come back for reevaluation.
Yep.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any objection? Motion passes.
So
Judge Slough, Sherry,
yes.
It's Mark Dustman. I have a suggestion. Since you are getting closer to your target, there is one area in IT where I think just by the cyclical nature of some of our programs, you will see from 14-15 to 15-16 a significant reduction. So don't know if you wanted to take that out of order, but it would be the telecom program.
Do you know the line item number, Mark, on our list or not?
37.
37?
37 on one and 43 on another.
Okay, so 37 on page 108 is the telecommunications support. Is that what you're referencing, Mark?
Yes, Judge.
Okay, and so you're suggesting that it can be reduced, and by what amount?
So as we mentioned before, the allocation for 14-15, which you're looking at, is $11.705 million. When we do our five-year budget, we look at what actually needs to be replaced in the trial courts. And for 15-16, our estimates are about $1 million less. So I would recommend that you allocate what we are requesting rather than what we had last year, and saving a little over $1 million.
Now, Mark, yes, I think we should do that, but the only concern is we're also looking for ongoing savings. This is a one-time. Do we know what the next year is going to look like?
Yeah, it'll go back up, and there are some years in this particular program, because remember this, a large portion of this program is refreshing network equipment at the courts, and it typically has useful life between 4 and 6 or 7 years. So there's cycles to this. The current year, or the budget year we're talking about, is one where there's fewer of those refresh needed. But if you're trying to address a problem next year, as I've heard many of your discussions are, you know, one-time fix, we'll come back and look at these. If you're trying to address a problem for the budget year, this is one way to address $1 million of it.
So it sounds to me like it's worth, even though we recognize that it may go up, most likely will go up the following year, it's worth it to move on the $1 million reduction, Jose?
And I think it may be prudent to do that since the CTAC committee is looking at it from a longer-term process. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they can also take a look at it and say, is there a more cost-effective way to continue to do the refresh?
Jose, I think you're looking at another program. This is telecom. Oh. I think you're referring to CCTC.
There's a motion and a second to accept the $1 million reduction. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you, Mark.
I'll buy you dinner, Mark.
Give me Klutz back.
Now the bartering starts. Sherry?
So I know we've hit our mark. But if what we're trying to do is to solve ongoing problems, I don't think our work is done because we're still $1 million short the year after. And I do think that we have, personally, as painful as this is, I think we should do the same for the ones we haven't looked at to decide, do they fit the criteria? Are they appropriate for IMF? And if not, where do they move? And I know we've hit our mark for next year, but it just seems to me that this is the third time I've had to do it. It's very painful. I'd rather solve it ongoing than have to come back.
I agree. I think we need to look at every single line item because once we sleep on this tomorrow morning, we may have come back and have some further dialogue. David.
So if you'll indulge me, there's one item that I'm hoping that we can talk about today while we've got this momentum, and I don't think it's going to take very long, but it's line item number 19, and it's the other post-employment benefits evaluation report. There's an obligation for an evaluation to be conducted. I think it's consistent with GADSB requirements.
What page is that? I thought that the program actually came up with some good suggestions.
So the question I just want to confirm, the evaluation that needs to be done, is that for local trial courts? And so as I understand it, we have to perform those evaluations, and in fact, there's the ability to build back to the fund the cost of evaluation. So it may be something that doesn't have to tax
the OPEB itself.
What's the program description page, Stephen?
185.
No, 185, is that what you said?
Yeah.
185. Because the program, I think, it suggests what you're going to recommend. It's,
okay.
It's not 185.
115? Yeah, they recommend the Judicial Council has managed it on behalf of trial courts. And that if you go to page 117, shift the funding, continue to manage it centrally, but shift it, have courts reimburse for getting the benefit of them doing it centrally.
Right. So
that's what they're recommending.
I was curious, so it can be charged against each local holding.
Right.
So yep.
There is
the cost recovery of administering the program.
Basically, that's what
yeah.
it amounts to.
Charged against the fund.
Charged against the fund because
so
it recovered. Well, that's what it's for. It does an evaluation for all of the courts that have one. So there would be a fund.
So here's the question. For courts that have not yet set up an OPEB trust, are they even part of this? I mean,
they should be charged.
Every court has to provide evaluation, either working on their own or working with their county. So all 58 courts have to submit. And so this vendor worked with each court in doing the actuarial analysis to determine what was the evaluation and then reported for each court to the controller.
So we'd have to find a way to apportion the cost of the $600,000 contract, for example, over all the courts that have an OPEB trust.
So we could still do a vendor, single vendor, but then there would be a cost recovery mechanism in order to get those funds.
But what does it gain by doing it that way?
Because
it comes out of the IMF.
The benefit is if having memorized the materials, the benefit is that they get a better deal by handling it centrally. I thought they did a good job in describing.
No, what the chargeback is, the expense comes out of, is eliminated from the IMF.
Yeah. Why should the IMF
pay
for it?
That have them
so,
and are required to do the
this
evaluation.
This is a mandate, though.
Yeah.
But it's not an IMF.
Come out of your
bank. It's a statewide. It's
not out of your operation.
But it's not an IMF requirement. It doesn't fit the IMF criteria. How is that different than many of the
others? It does. It's a statewide benefits court throughout the state.
Yeah.
I don't know that this one fits.
Oh, see, for me, it doesn't fit IMF at all. I like their suggestion.
Just a point of clarification on David's point is that not everyone has the OPEB to be able to charge against it as a fiduciary. So, you know, those valuations that are done for courts that do not have, whether it be county, OPEB, or others, have a different mechanism.
Hi, this is Bob Fleshman. I joined the call.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah, and just one other thing is that vendor also, in addition to doing the valuations, provided a lot of guidance as courts were establishing these accounts, and so they did a little bit more. We got a little bit more for our money than otherwise just doing the valuation. So it was in terms of a single consistent information to all courts, which, you know, we hope we get, is, you know, if you get different opinions, if you all do them differently, then you might be in different places sort of in your understanding of how your OPEB is established. But anyways, the question is, can it be reimbursed? But if there's a court that doesn't have an OPEB, then what do we do?
So do we know how many courts did not set up an OPEB trust? Do we have an idea?
I did not.
Yeah, we do. So I want to clarify that this doesn't just apply to those courts that have OPEB trust. This applies to everybody, even courts that don't have any OPEB obligations, you know, that don't have that retiree health obligation. GASB requirements will stipulate that we will have to do valuations on those courts anyway. So we did 58 valuations in the last cycle, and I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page with that. In terms of OPEB trusts, which have added workload to the reporting cycle, over half the courts established OPEB trusts last year. So there was a huge move from the, you know, I can count on one hand to now, you know, more than 50% of the courts having trusts.
So where does this dialogue then take us as it relates to their recommendation?
So I guess I'm still unclear. I mean, if you have an OPEB trust, you could, and some share of that cost is apportioned to my court, I could pay for that out of my OPEB assets, out of the trust itself. But if I didn't have an OPEB trust, yet I'm a court that every court is still required to have the valuation
done.
Use
your local funds to have to pay
your
share.
Use your own operating funds,
right,
I suppose, to pay for it.
That's right.
Are we clear that these can be paid out of local OPEB trusts? I don't think we've ever, I mean, at least at our end, I don't believe we've ever talked about that.
Well, we've done the analysis locally because we're kind of in a strange situation, and it is permitted based on our analysis. Maybe that's just something that Office of
LSO should
Legal
look
Services
at.
Can confirm.
Yeah, I definitely think we, you know, should have take a second look. I know, David, you're kind of in a unique position as you transition from the county. So we would want to make sure that other folks, everybody else, that would apply to everyone else as well.
This is Bob Buckley from Legal. We can certainly take a look at that for you.
And does, Bob, do you know if there are, Fleshman, do you know if there are courts that are piggybacking on their county's OPEB trust?
There are just a few that are. Most, nearly all have established their own in the past year, either with PERS or PARS, which are the two council-approved OPEB trust providers.
So is this an issue that we could have Legal look at maybe this afternoon and into the evening and report back to us in the morning, and then we would have a better idea as to what direction we want to go with it? Can Legal look at that for us?
We can sure take a look at it, yeah.
Great. All right, we'll pass it until tomorrow morning then.
He's thanking you for deciding what he's doing.
All right. So where are we? It's 5 after 5. Do you folks want to continue on? Do you want to stop?
No.
All right.
Well,
yes, Sherry?
Where are we money-wise?
Where are we money-wise?
We've balanced.
I almost got it in the black. But not all ongoing.
Yeah, but it's not all
yes.
ongoing. That's the problem. So we need to keep looking tomorrow.
What's the not from the ongoing? I mean, another 4 million, 2 million, 3 million?
Probably a couple of million.
Yeah, don't care.
Did you
guys look at that?
Don't you think we should have all of the line items?
I absolutely agree. As much as I don't want to, I think.
No, I just think we haven't done our job. I think that's our job.
All right. So the consensus is that we're going to wrap it up for today. Tomorrow, the group will pick up with completing the line-by-line assessment, and then kind of reevaluate, see where we are. I am going to be over at the Capitol tomorrow morning, so you'll be on your own for a while.
Thank you.
And then I'll head back as soon as I finish up my work over there and graduate all of us. I think we got a lot accomplished
yes.
today.
Yeah. And we start at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Is that a concern for anyone? 8 o'clock? Wonderful.
8 o'clock here. Thank
can
you
all.
Oh, and people would like coffee. Can we contribute to a kitty if there isn't coffee here or something?
This room be locked? Can we leave the center?
Jody, do you know if this room be locked?
It will be. You can leave your binders here.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Really?
That was
just
across the street.
I guess.
Hang up.
Load up in the morning.
So, you know.